Yeah, wait, I want to do this.
Wake up, it's time to start your day. No better way than rolling with David L. Gray. Wake up, it's praise and morning prayer. Then news and reflections with David L. Gray.
Hey there, it's David L. Gray in the morning. After news headlines, I'm going to get into today's lead stories for you. In about 5 past the hour, I'm going to inspire you with a commentary on today's readings of Mass. And I hope that your next 30 minutes with me brings you lots of joy and lots of peace. So let's go ahead and get started with today's headlines from Tanya.
Good morning. Here is your January 20th, 2026 briefing from David L. Gray in the morning. In the United States, the Pentagon has directed select military units to prepare for possible deployment to Minnesota as federal investigations continue into unrest surrounding immigration enforcement. Meanwhile, in Washington state, U.S. Marshals arrested a fugitive discovered hiding under a child's bed, recovering a handgun and high-capacity magazines. And in sports, the Buffalo Bills have dismissed head coach Sean McDermott after 9 seasons without reaching a Super Bowl. Overseas, Spain is responding to a tragic high-speed train derailment that has left dozens dead and many more injured. Emergency crews remain on site as investigators look into potential mechanical and signaling failures. In Catholic news, Virginia's bishops are speaking out forcefully against a proposed abortion amendment, urging the faithful to mobilize in defense of human life as the measure advances toward public consideration. Today, the church honors Saints Fabian and Sebastian. Saint Fabian, Pope and martyr, was unexpectedly chosen as Pope in the year 236. When a dove descended upon him during the election. He organized the Church of Rome into 7 districts and was martyred under Emperor Decius. Saint Sebastian, a Roman soldier and Christian, encouraged believers during persecution. After surviving execution by arrows, he was later beaten to death for his faith. He is the patron of athletes and soldiers. On this day in Catholic history, in 1377, Pope Gregory XI re-entered Rome from Avignon, marking the end of the Avignon papacy and setting the stage for the Western Schism. Turning to the markets, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is at 49,359, down 83 points. The NASDAQ Composite is at 23,515, down 14 points. And Bitcoin is trading at approximately $78,400, down slightly from yesterday. And finally, a lighter moment from Florida, where a sheriff's deputy managed to lasso and handcuff a runaway emu after a chaotic chase through a neighborhood, calling it a career first and likely the emu's worst day ever. This has been Tanya with your January 20th, 2026 briefing from David L. Gray in the morning. I'll be back on Wednesday at the same time for your next update. Thank you.
Thank you, Tanya, and pray for us, Saint Fabian and Saint Sebastian. So, you know, I always laugh when I hear a story about Florida Man. it's just always something with Florida Man. That was the emu. That was a good one to you. But we begin this morning with some hypocritical news coming from the pens of the United States' most left-leaning Cardinals, Supich, McElroy, Tobin, who have stepped forward with a joint statement criticizing the direction of America's foreign policy. Let's take a look here.
Three Catholic leaders are calling out the Trump administration, one of them Chicago's Archbishop Blaise Supich.
Yeah, the clerics are voicing their opposition to recent foreign policy moves in Venezuela, Ukraine, and Greenland. Scott is joining us now with the latest on this. Scott?
Yeah, Terrence and Sylvia, the release of this statement comes just days after President Trump announced that as Commander-in-Chief, his decisions are constrained only by his own morality. Inspired by Pope Leo XIV, Supich, along with Cardinal Robert McElroy, Archbishop in Washington, and Cardinal Joseph Tobin, Archbishop in Newark, released a joint statement today questioning the United States' moral role in confronting evil around the world. Cardinal Supich saying, quote, "As pastors entrusted with the teaching of our people, we cannot stand by while decisions are made that condemn millions to lives trapped permanently at the edge of existence. Pope Leo has given us clear direction, and we must apply his teachings to the conduct of our nation and its leaders." Today's statement is considered a framing of Pope Leo's vision for America's future diplomacy when dealing with foreign countries. So far, there has been no response to today's statement from the White House. Terrence?
So let's be honest, for many faithful Catholics, especially those who lean conservative, the first reaction here is not applause, it's suspicion. These are not neutral figures. These are the same cardinals who have pushed for communion, for divorce and remarried, who have downplayed the gravity of abortion and the LGBT movement in the church, who have embraced some of the most progressive interpretations of Pope Francis, who have treated traditional Catholics like a sideshow, as if we're the problem. So when they suddenly speak about moral urgency, about America's role in the world, it's natural to ask, like, what's really going on? But here's where we need to be both sharp and fair. Because buried inside these statements is something we can agree with, something that the church has always taught, something we can affirm without endorsing their whole leftist agenda. They warn that the world is shifting towards a zeal for war, that military action is becoming normalized, and that the moral foundation of America's policy is cracking. And whether these cardinals realize it or not, their concern echoes popes from way back to Benedict XIV and Pius XII and Saint Pope John Paul II. That war is always a tragedy, that we must never treat military action as a tool for convenience. So yes, we can affirm that part. We can affirm the call for moral clarity, for restraint, for defense of human dignity. We can affirm the reminder that America's power must be guided by justice, not by impulse. But here's a problem, and here's where the suspicion is justified. These cardinals have a track record of speaking loudly about the sins of the West while whispering about the sins of regimes that persecute Christians. That they critique American foreign policy, but rarely speak with equal force about China's genocide against the Uyghurs, or the imprisonment of Catholics in Nicaragua, or the slaughter of Christians in Nigeria. They warn about America's role, but they rarely warn about the moral collapse inside the church itself, of which they played a huge role in. So the question becomes, is this a prophetic message from these leftists, or is it just selective outrage? Are they defending Catholic teaching, or are they using Catholic language to advance a political narrative? So, and this is where Catholics must be discerning. We don't reject the truth just because of who it comes from, someone we distrust in this case. But we also don't accept the message uncritically because it's wrapped in religious language. We test everything, like the Bereans in the book of Acts. We measure it against the full teaching of the church, not as some sort of political worldview or preferences of some prelates. And here's a deeper point that I think you'll understand and that you'll appreciate. The church's moral authority is strongest when it's consistent. When it's consistent. When it defends the life of the womb and life on a battlefield. When it condemns unjust war and unjust regimes. When it speaks clearly about the dignity of the human person, not just when it's politically convenient. And so I would say, yes, we can affirm the truth and what these cardinals said, but we also can say without apology that their credibility is weakened by their years, their decades of selective silence and their ideological alignment. And until they show some courage in confronting the moral failures inside the church and the moral atrocities committed by anti-Christian regimes, the faithful are right. We're right to listen with caution, because in the end, our loyalty is not to Supich or McRoy or Tobin. Our loyalty is to Christ and his church, to his fullness, the fullness of the truth, and not just parts that fit the political narrative. This is David L. Gray in the morning. Hello, I'm David L. Gray. I'm a Catholic theologian, writing and speaking and teaching courses you can find at stdominicsmedia.com. My work centers on liturgical theology, which is also the focus of my doctoral studies at the Catholic University of America. Welcome to my morning show. It's here where I'll walk you through the day's top stories, offer an uplifting reflection on the readings at Mass, and introduce you to the saints of the day. We're here every weekday at 6:45 a.m. If this show enriches your day, I hope you come back, and I look forward to connecting with you. Let's get into today's show. And another thing that we're watching right now in America is a policy. It's not a policy disagreement. It's not a debate between two political philosophies. It's a full-scale moral confrontation between those who believe that the human person was created by God and those who believe that the human person is some sort of raw material that the state can reshape. This is an anthropological issue that's going on right now. And we've dealt with these anthropological issues going all the way back to 1517 with Martin Luther. And here we are again. So let's consider as an example the states rushing to pass these so-called shield laws in states like Washington, Oregon, California, New York, Massachusetts, Vermont, Colorado, Illinois, all the usual suspects. These states have decided that parents no longer have the right to know or to consent, or even to object when their child seeks an abortion or some sort of gender transition procedure. And these laws don't just expand access, they actively block the cooperation with the states, and they hide medical records, they protect adults that are facilitating these irreversible procedures. Let's take a look at this article here so I can show you what's going on here in these states. So in this article from Fox, it says Catholic group asks SCOTUS to block California law against revealing students' gender identities to parents. The attorneys for moral law, Thomas More Society, said parents only relinquish authority needed for the school to carry out its educational mission. And the legal group asked the United States Supreme Court to block a California law that prevents schools from notifying parents of students' gender identities. The Thomas More Society filed an emergency appeal on Thursday asking the Supreme Court to reinstate a rule issued last month by federal judges that parents with religious objection can opt out of law's restrictions. The challenge provision bars teachers from informing parents if a student wishes to change their so-called pronouns and their gender identity. And the parents only relinquish authority needed for a school to carry out its educational mission, not its
ideological mission or anything like that. And the parents, they do not delegate authority to make decisions regarding whether the child is a boy or a girl. The attorneys at Thomas More have said. So this is a big deal. I mean, think about that. If a parent tries to intervene, the state steps in and says, no, the child belongs to us now. And that's essentially what they're doing. And that's not healthcare. That's not compassion. That's a state claiming ownership over your child, and they're proud of it. And while these states are shielding a culture of death, Catholic schools in places like Maryland, California, Massachusetts, Indiana are being sued, investigated, and threatened for refusing to adopt the gender ideology. Schools that simply affirm what every civilization has affirmed, what we've known for thousands of years, that boys are boys and girls are girls, are now being treated like criminals. Catholic schools are being told, either abandon your faith or we will come after you. And I hope you see the pattern here, that ideological lawsuits against Catholic schools that punish resistance is really just a coordinated attack designed to create a new moral ecosystem, designed to reshape society from top down. But I think here's the line in the sand. They believe that the state defines truth. We believe that God defines truth. They believe that identity is self-created. We believe that it's received. That's a huge difference. They believe that children belong to the government. We believe that children belong to their parents, ultimately God. The children are just a gift that God has given us to lead to Him. And they believe that the body is meaningless. We believe that the body is sacred. They believe that the church must be silent. We believe that the church must speak. So this is not right versus left. Again, this is an anthropological argument. It's true anthropology versus anti-anthropology. So this is church versus the spirit of the new age, simply put. So this is, I don't know, the culture of life versus culture of death. And I think the lines have never been clearer. But here's the good news. Here's the joy in the morning. I think the pressure is forcing moral clarity with us. Catholic schools, at least many of them, we're going to forget about Canada for a moment, they're rediscovering their backbone. Bishops are issuing stronger guidance. Parents are waking up. And even people who aren't Catholic are saying, hey, wait a minute. Why is the state hiding medical procedures from parents? Why are schools being punished for telling the truth? And I think this is happening. This moral clarity is happening because deep down inside, people know that something is a little bit off. Something is wrong. They can feel it in the deepest part of them, that harm is being done to their children, and are looking for someone, anyone with moral clarity, someone who's speaking the truth. Why not us? Why not Catholics? Why don't we take the lead? That's where we come in. That's where the church comes in. That's where every Catholic parent, teacher, leader must stand up and say, no, you do not get to redefine a human person. You do not get to erase family. You do not get to silence the church. And ultimately, this is a moment to draw the line. And by the grace of God, we will. This is David L. Gray in the morning. Hey, you ever heard people say that you have to spend money to make money? Well, with my Capital One Quicksilver card, that's exactly what happens. Here's how I use it. I set my monthly budget aside, and then I put everything I'm going to spend on my Quicksilver. Bills, gas, groceries, subscriptions, entertainment, all of it. And if I spend about $3,000 a month, depending upon how much of that is travel, I earn between $45 and $80 in cash back rewards. That's real money for doing nothing extra. And here's the best part. I save all those rewards all year, and I use them for Christmas gifts. That way, I bless my family and friends without spending a single dollar of my own cash, just rewards. The Quicksilver card from Capital One is, I think, simply a smart way to make free money by doing what you already do. Get your card today, tap on the QR code on the screen or the link below in the description. And when the application opens, you'll see my name, David O'Gray. So you know you're in the right place to start earning with your new Quicksilver card. Apply today.
Go make some money. What's in your wallet? Hey, welcome back. This is David L. Gray in the morning, and we're going to take a look at today's readings at Mass, and I'm going to offer you a commentary on it. So the first reading of Mass, it comes from Samuel. We talked a little bit about that yesterday, chapter 16, verses 1 to 13 that we're in now. Yesterday, we talked about the reading was about Saul losing his right to be the king of Israel because of his disobedience. Now, here comes Samuel looking for the new king, and so he finds David. So that's the first reading. It's really powerful reading. It says something about how God sees different than how man sees. But we're going to take a look at today's gospel reading from Mark. And the gospel is from Mark chapter 2, verses 23 to 28. And it says, as Jesus was passing through a field of grain on the Sabbath, his disciples began to make a path while picking the heads of grain. At this, the Pharisees said to him, look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? And he said to them, have you ever read what David did when he was in need and he and his companions were hungry? How he went into the house of God when Abiathar was the high priest and ate the bread of offering that only priests could lawfully eat, and shared it with his companions. Then he said to him, the Sabbath, this is the power line right here. This is the teaching. The Sabbath, Jesus says, was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. This is really a new math that Jesus is offering here, a new order of things, a new formula, a new calculation. And he's and the text then says, that is why the Son of Man is even the Lord of the Sabbath. So a really powerful teaching there that we have with us today. And so I would like to reframe that and say that, yes, the liturgy was made for man. You know, Sunday, we can say Sunday was made for man, not man for Sunday. Liturgy was made for man, not man for liturgy. And so so the day that the Lord raised, the day that the Son of the Lord is raised, Sunday, is the holiest day in our Christian week. You know, I was I always wanted a like tailor-made suits and tailor-made shoes. I think last time we were in Florence, you know, they have all the leather there, and I think, hey man, I should get some tailor-made shoes, but I didn't. It seemed like a commitment, you know, to go in there and sit down and somebody measure you and do the whole thing. And I wasn't in the mood for the whole thing. So, and I don't think I've ever gotten a tailor-made suit just because my size fluctuates a lot often. Like some people, their weight fluctuates 5 pounds or something like that. No, my weight fluctuates 20 pounds. I'll go, like I went home for 3 weeks to the States, and then we went on a cruise. And yeah, I went from 180 to like 205 just in 3 weeks. And that's even working out, you know, a couple times a week. So my weight is crazy. So I've never been able to, I never want to really invest in a suit knowing that my suits, I have suits for different sizes. Right. I have suits that, you know, fit me right when I'm 175. I have suits that fit me right when, you know, 185 and 200. So, and I know the difference when I'm in, you know, when there's a suit I want to wear, like my black suit, you know, you want to wear black at particular times. Right. And my black suit, I think, is like a 180 suit. That's what I got it when I was like 180, and it fits good right there. But I always imagine, I always thought about like, what would it feel like to have like something just for me, like a suit that was just for me, just for my size. And when I slide into it, it just feels perfect. I always wonder what that felt like. And I think that's really the point of today's readings, that the math of the situation is that the things that God has given us are just right for us. They fit us perfectly. They're exactly what we need, when we need it, how we need it, where we need it.
And it's not, you know, the things that God gave us is not like the things I would give myself, like a suit. You know, those things on my clothes rack are, they're not always just right at the right time. Not the gifts from God, not his gifts, not his fruits. They're exactly what we need when we need them. And I would say in particular, I would say that the liturgy of the Catholic Mass is just right. If you haven't yet, get my book, The Liturgical Sense of the Readings at Mass. It is the greatest book I think you ever add to your collection about the readings at Mass, every Sunday and every holy day of obligation. I explain them with what I call the liturgical sense, which means I explain the readings in context of the liturgy, what the liturgy is actually trying to teach us and how to live the liturgy in the world. So there's never been another book like this. This is year A, because we're in year A. So get this whenever you, wherever you get books, or if you want to, just hit the QR code right there. And you get it there. But yeah, but back to the point, let me connect today's readings. Jesus saying that the man, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for a Sabbath. Let me go ahead and connect that to the liturgy so you can live this out. And so, you know, and it goes back to what we were talking about yesterday with desire. Okay. And I was talking about how one of the reasons why Roy's trying to manage God and rather than cooperate with God, because we don't always desire the good. Okay. And the liturgy, the proof that the liturgy is made for us, that is everything that we need, that is perfect for us. It fits perfectly. All of his sacraments are for us. And another thing we look to is just how the liturgy is structured, right? Because the liturgy and the Mass, what it gives us is for the highest desires we can desire. And I'll explain them to you. So, and these are in no particular order because they're all good, they're all holy, they're all divine, but the liturgy presents them to us in this way. So the first holy desire that the liturgy gives us, it teaches us in its first movement, is the liturgy or the rite of penance. So we come into the Mass, and for the first movement of the Mass, we're just saying, I'm sorry. We're being repentant. We're saying prayers of repentance. And then this is a good and a holy desire that we do show up and we do say, yes, Lord, I'm here. Yes, I messed up during the week. I messed up yesterday. I messed up this morning. I sinned, but I'm here. I'm here with you. I'm here for healing. I'm here for redemption. I'm here for sanctification. I'm here. I showed up and I'm sorry, right? And this is what same thing we do in relationship with our spouses. Sometimes we just have to say, look, I'm sorry, but I'm here. I'm here to make amends. And the desire for repentance is a holy desire. And that's the first thing that the Mass teaches us, that repentance is a holy desire. That's why we're here. And then we move on to the liturgy of the word, which teaches us the second holy desire, which is a desire to get to know God. A desire to desire is a holy desire to want God to reveal himself more fully to us, because that's what happens in the readings at Mass. God reveals himself to us, how much he loves us. That's what we're hearing. We're hearing the love confession, oftentimes through the narrative of story. And so this is a holy desire. That if God is our creator, then we should want to know more about him, just like we want to know the more the person we love in the human realm, in the visible realm. Or we would want to desire more, know more about our spouse, our children, the people we love. We want to know more about, tell me more about you. I think of a scene from Les Miserables. You had Corset and Hugo, right? And remember when they met, they were in a garden and they spent some time there. And I think Corset had, you know, her head on his lap, and they were just talking, right? And they were talking for hours. And the book says that they, said everything about each other that they could, right? And then after this long discussion, then
he leans in and he asks her name. Like, what is your name? Imagine that. They don't even know each other's names at this point. They just know that they love each other. And the first thing that they wanted to do was get to know each other. And their names didn't have anything to do with that. What your name is, bear no bearing, made an impact in what I wanted to know about you. I really wanted to know, not just your name, who you truly are, right? And so that's a holy desire, to want to the person you love to disclose more of themselves to you, revelation. So that's the second holy desire to Mass. And the third holy desire to the Mass teaches in the liturgy of the Holy Eucharist is that it's a holy desire to want to have communion with God, a true indwelling and communion, the true intimacy. And this is the most abused desire that we have. This desire in us is innate, and that's why it comes out in the most disordered ways through sin. The most disordered ways we can name are, of course, you know, pornography, masturbation, fornication, adultery, old fiction tales such as, you know, vampires wanting to eat the flesh of the person, drink their blood, right? These things come out in distorted ways. That's how we know this is perhaps the holiest desire that we can have, true intimacy with God, true communion, right? You know, it's true indwelling. It's a holy desire to want that level of intimacy with God that comes by the way of repentance, comes by the way of knowing, and then this intimacy, right? We can be intimate with God if we're repentant. We can be intimate with God if we know him. And then the last holy desire that the Mass teaches us, and that lets us know that the Mass is for us and not for the animals or the fish or the birds of the air, you know, not aliens, or, you know, anything like that. It's truly for us, because the Mass sends us into the world then, therefore, to be who we have received, who we've been repentant with, who we've heard from, who we've receive revelation from, who we've been intimate from, to go into world and to share that person with those who have not, right? And so, you know, some people say, well, no, the holy desire of the Mass is just to come and worship, just to fulfill our Sunday obligation. No, if that was a teaching of the Mass would keep us there. It would lock the doors. We wouldn't have a home. We would have a bed in the church. The church would have restaurants, more bathrooms, maybe a Chick-fil-A. And Chick-fil-A will be open on Sunday because it would be the holiest. The Mass will want to keep us there, right? But the Mass doesn't say that. It doesn't want to keep us there. It says, go. Et missa as go. You are dismissed to go be in the world whoever you receive. So these are the four holy desires of the Mass. I talk about it again in my book on the first Sunday of Advent. I talk a little bit about it. I'll be doing a retreat this Lent, one of four holy desires at St. Dominic's Media. Check it out. But in relation to what Jesus is saying, the Sabbath was made for man, a man that was not for the man, not man for the Sabbath. Remember that the Holy Mass is truly for you, for your sanctification and for your holiness. And this is David O. Gray in the morning. Thank you for coming. Hope I bless your day with some joy. And I will see you again in tomorrow. God bless.
Yeah, wait. I want to this.
Wake up. It's time to start your day. No better way than rolling with David L. Gray. Wake up. It's praise and morning prayer. Then news and reflections with David L. Gray. Your timeline. Wake up, come on, tap like sub and share. It's David L. Gray in the morning with